Good evening, it is Leah with you on MKFM, back with the MK Mental Health Hour, where we will dedicate an hour each month at 7 o'clock on a Sunday evening with local organisation Arthur Ellis Mental Health Support to provide a bit of a safe space to discuss a variety of mental health topics, as well as share expert practical advice. Each show, we will be joined by John Manning, who is the founder of Arthur Ellis, as well as an expert in that topic that we'll be discussing. And this Sunday, we're going to be talking all about safeguarding. But before we get into that, John, welcome back to the studio. Lovely to see you.
Hi, Leah.
Hello.
Nice to see you.
Nice to see you.
After summer as well.
I know. The months are just flying by, aren't they?
They are.
They're absolutely flying
by.
I know. And actually, speaking of the summer, you had quite a busy one, didn't you? Because you had your summer party. You had quite a busy one.
Yeah, we kind of piloted something. We eventually want to bring a well-being festival to Milton Keynes, where every family can get involved, professionals can get involved. So this year we tested it out with some of the professionals we work with. So we work with about 75% of GP surgeries across the city, a lot of schools as well. So now obviously schools are coming back in. So we just wanted an opportunity for everyone to let their hair down. We had loads of well-being stuff there. So we had like badminton courts that we set up, and there were water rockets that people could play
wow.
with, and fire and art classes, yoga. So
nice.
It was really, really good.
And it was a great success, and hopefully be back next year?
Yes, well, we're looking to do it bigger and better every year. Obviously, we're going to need to let people know about it a bit more now that we've done our pilot and get the community around us and helping us out a little bit, but we'll share the news about how people could do that in the near future. But
brilliant.
It was really good.
And obviously, like you were just saying, schools now back. Does that have an impact with Arthur Ellis? How does that impact the work
that
you
do? Yeah, we don't really work term time. We work throughout the year, so we continue to support children throughout the summer, even when they're not in school, which really helps because we can prepare people into that transition, maybe into a new school or a new year, if that's something that the young person's struggling with. But the summer for us is quite a lot about new systems and those sorts of things, because we listen a lot to our team, and admin in mental health, in any job really, is a real pain. I think everyone agrees that admin is a pain.
No one likes admin,
no.
Do they?
And
no.
It's like saying that I use is that teachers don't get into teaching for marking. You don't go through your degree like, I can't wait until I mark all these books.
Yes.
So if we can use technology to improve those sorts of elements, so we've been investing quite a lot in our back office systems, so kind of boring from my perspective. I like doing shiny things. But it's been really, really important. So now all of that stuff is launched. We're ready to go into this year to forge new partnerships with schools.
Brilliant. Well, exciting things ahead. So tonight we're talking all about safeguarding, which means that our expert on the show tonight is Tammy Redman, who is an independent trainer and consultant in safeguarding. Welcome to the studio, Tammy.
Hello, Nolia. Nice to come in.
Lovely to have you with us this evening. So tell us a little bit about you, Tammy, and your background in safeguarding.
Yeah, I've been working with children for about 38 years, and 36 years of those years I've been delivering safeguarding training
wow.
across various different agencies, both schools, nurseries, local authorities and volunteers. Groups and charities out there as well. Been an independent trainer for about 8 years now, but before that I worked for the Safeguarding Board within Milton Keynes, so delivering training within that element. These 6 weeks holidays can be a really scary time for young people because they don't have the support from the schools at that point. So really important that there are services out there that they can access and have somebody to talk to and somebody to support them around that.
Absolutely. Well, safeguarding, obviously, a really, really important topic that we'll be diving into a little bit deeper in the Mental Health Hour. Starting off with, what is safeguarding? We'll get into that right after this. So it is the Mental Health Hour on MKFM with Leah, joined in the studio by John Manning from Arthur Ellis Mental Health Support and Tammy Redman, who is an independent trainer and consultant in safeguarding. So John, let's start with the basics. What is safeguarding?
Well, I'll go to Tammy for the specifics around it, but certainly within Arthur Ellis, every organisation who works with anybody that might be vulnerable has to have a level of formal safeguarding training in place. So at Arthur Ellis, everyone is trained in safeguarding children and adults, so they're very separate things, because there's, you know, over the age of 18 people have different choices that they can make, and there's lots that goes into it, which we'll get into. But then in the organization, or in any organization, there needs to be someone who's trained at a DSL level, which is a designated safeguarding lead.
Right.
So I'm one of those. I'm not actively involved, because as the CEO you can't be. It's kind of a bit of a conflict because you might be biased towards your own organization.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some principles around that and ethics around that you need to have embedded, but I'm DSL aware, so I know the sort of decision processes that we need to make, and essentially the lead takes on the responsibility. So if there's a particular case of safeguarding, we take the lead on it, and therefore we hold the responsibility.
Right, okay. And you've actually had the services of Tammy, haven't you?
Tammy trains everybody. We get together. It's all periodic, so it's a bit like first aid. You know, you need to have it every couple of years. Everything gets refreshed, and Tammy does a great job of making sure that we're up to date on all of the different changes, because there's quite a few changes that come on between those years, depending on what's going on online. And, you know, there's so many things to consider.
And with anything around safeguarding, it's the updates. It's making sure you keep up to date with the changes that come through. And it's not just the face-to-face element. There are so many issues online in terms of risks for children and adults online that you need to be aware of and keep up to date with.
So safeguarding, in a nutshell, is all about kind of protecting those people from lots of different elements.
Yeah, it's about the prevention side. What we're trying to do is prevent things from happening. So when we look at the protection element, that's about when something has happened and we need to do something about it. We need to put things in place to keep that person safe. We also might need to put support in place. The safeguarding is much wider. It's everything from risk assessments through to checking on allergies to making sure that people are aware of what they need to do if they're concerned about a young person or an adult, and knowing what to look for, so picking up on any signs and symptoms they may see. So it's very wide, and it's not just about organisations, it's also about individuals. Many cases don't get picked up because people will see something and they're not confident in reporting things through, or don't know where to report it through to. And particularly with children, they can't protect themselves. They need somebody to be looking out for them and picking up on those elements.
Because, like, the training that we get from you, it is very different from I know that our training courses that you run, it's kind of merged together in a way, but the way that you treat an issue related to a child is very different to how you treat an adult.
Yeah, absolutely. With children, we have a duty to protect them. They can't protect themselves. So there is a requirement that anybody who works with children must know what to do, must know how to report things through, and a requirement that they do that. There's no option within it. Adults is a bit more tricky because they have the ability to make choices for themselves. So if somebody chooses to live with abuse, so that could be domestic abuse or it could be financial abuse, as long as they've got the mental capacity, they have the choice to be able to do that. The couple of issues that may interact with that is if there is a child at risk, then the child takes priority. So that would still need to be reported through. Or if they don't have the mental capacity to make decisions for themselves, they're unable to actually see the risks that are there or make good decisions, then actually somebody can intervene as long as there is an assessment made. That makes it really difficult because there are often cases where you can see people are at risk of harm, but there's nothing you can do about it because they don't want to carry things forward. So it can be about working with people, trying to persuade them they need support and helping them to recognise that element.
So I suppose that's where the importance of your role is, about that prevention before it gets to that stage.
Yeah. It's much cheaper to provide prevention rather than to interact when there is actually a risk that's there. It's also better for the person who's involved in it, because actually if you can put support in place early, you can prevent things from escalating. Because what you don't want to do is get to the stage where a child needs to be removed or an adult needs to be taken into care. You want to make sure the support is there. I mean, in terms of statistics, we've got about 70,000 children in Milton Keynes, roughly, just as a rough figure. If you look at the number of children who are in care, it's about 380. It's a very small number.
Right.
And if we look at the amount of children who've got a child protection plan in place where there is a direct risk to them, it's about 180. So we've got very small numbers that get picked up in terms of that, but the safeguarding element, where support is offered by organisations such as Arthur Ellis or Drug and Alcohol Services or Sexual Health Services, all of those are out there as well. And it will be hundreds of people, in fact thousands of people, who will be accessing that sort of level of support and services out there.
And if you think, breaking down from 70,000 to 180 that have been intervened with, so to give you a bit of an idea, we probably have about 9 safeguarding issues a week. So that's quite a lot, really. That's quite regular, but it is that prevention. So it's not necessarily, I think, safeguarding, people think, oh my God, there's something really wrong.
Yeah, it sounds worrying, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. And it's a bit misleading, really, because it doesn't necessarily mean that something's wrong. It's that this may develop into something that could be unhealthy. So we need to put some things in place now in order to help.
So, and if you look at what's going on out there at the moment, we've got an economic crisis. There are families who are really struggling to pay their bills. That puts extra stresses on families. It raises those tensions. So families that may have been coping previously, they are now just being pushed over the edge, and that may lead to safeguarding issues. It's not because they don't want to care for their children or for adults within the family. It's they just don't have the capacity or the resources to do that. So a lot lot of this is about identifying what support's available and making sure they know where that is and they're able to access it. You've also got whole groups of people out there where their pride will stop them from actually asking for help. They're ashamed. We're British. We don't ask for help.
No,
we're taught
don't.
That we keep everything inside. Mm. Well, actually, there's no shame in asking for help, identifying you need support. And everybody struggles at certain points. So it's about making sure they know where to go and that they're happy to ask for support if they need it.
Absolutely. Well, we'll be talking about what support is available out there throughout the show this evening. And we continue with the conversation next. It's Sunday evening on the MK Mental Health Hour with Leah. Tonight we're talking all about safeguarding. We've spoken about what safeguarding is, but John, what might a safeguarding case look like?
There's loads of different, it's a wide spectrum. So there are some low-level safeguarding issues, which I'll go to Tammy to help explain a couple of examples of those. And then there are quite severe high-level safeguarding issues, which then we need to intervene with quite quickly. And essentially it's just about assessing risk. So Tammy, I know that from a low-level safeguarding issue, they're more common.
Yeah, absolutely. When we look at referrals that go into children's services, about 13% of referrals that go in are the significant issues. They are the high-risk ones where their child is at danger at that point. Those are the low number of it. They get dealt with quickly. 87% of referrals that go in are lots of low-level concerns that on their own are pretty insignificant. But when you bring them together, they start to create a picture and you start to see multiple concerns within there. So in terms of anybody working with children, it's really important that they have really good record keeping, that they pick up on those elements, and that somebody such as the DSL is looking through those records to see any patterns that may emerge within there. Because it may be very, very subtle things we're seeing, such as a child who's really tired during the day. So actually, why are they not sleeping? Is it because they're overcrowded within the home? Is it because they're spending all of their time online? So what are they doing online? It may be that there are issues around finances within the family. Maybe that child is coming in hungry or is coming in dirty because they can't afford to run the washing machine as often as they did previously, or they can't provide the food that they need. Now, again, those aren't about the parents wanting to put their child in that situation. It may be they just don't know where to go to get that help. So a lot of our low-level safeguarding issues are around signposting families to additional support that's maybe out there and making them feel not ashamed to be asking for help. We all struggle at certain points, so it's about picking up on that element.
Yeah, we've encouraged some people to, and we've sort of supported people to go to like food banks. I know MKFM do a lot with MK Food
Bank. Yeah, we do.
But it's a, like you said about pride earlier on, it's a massive step. If that's the first time you've ever had to do something like that. I live in the north of Milton Keynes and drive through Wolverton, and I've certainly noticed the queue to the community fridge just getting longer and longer. So it's something that, unfortunately, is becoming a bit more of a staple within some people's lives. But it's those little signs, and I think, I don't know whether it helps people to know, but there are people out there like myself and you, Tammy, and everyone really looking out for these things. So if, you know, we can pick up on it, and we will pick up on it, and we will help you to do something about it.
So it's important to pick up on those low-level signs. What are some other cases that we might be looking out for?
What we might be seeing is things like domestic abuse. Now, Milton Keynes has the highest reported rate of domestic abuse in the country.
Gosh.
That doesn't mean we have more cases than anybody else, but we do have a police force that any time they go out to a domestic incident, they will risk assess that. And if there are children living in the household, then they will inform children's services so they can pick up on patterns of behaviour at an early stage. Again, it's about picking things up early, because what you don't want things to do is progress to the stage where that child is at huge risk within that household, but also thinking about the adults within there and the support they may need as well. They might need help to escape, or they may just need some support to actually get the relationship back on track in terms of that element. So we do see high levels of that, and we also need to be aware about things like internet safety. We know all of our children these days, they
such
are all
a huge
online
one.
Yeah, phones, yeah. They have it with them constantly. It's part of their lives. I belong to a generation where you had to go and use the phone at the corner. So you used to go down to the corner and that's how you contacted people. Our children have got the phones on them all the time now, and you see children as young as 3 or 4 where families just hand over the phone to them for to occupy that child, not knowing what their children are accessing online. So the real risk asks around what they may be seeing there in terms of materials. And what they say is the biggest concern about what's going online is the content they may be accessing. So they may be accessing material around self-harm, around how to commit suicide. They may be accessing things about bulimia, anorexia. They may be accessing things around radicalization as well. And unfortunately, the way the algorithms work on computers is once they start looking at a certain element, it will lead them on to further information. It brings them in deeper. So once they start on that route, they may be drawn further and further into it. And so parents really need to be aware of what their children are doing, having those conversations with their children about what they're accessing online and what their interests are, because that's the only way they'll pick up on those concerns that may be there.
And it might be something which sounds quite innocent. We were actually saying off air that, you know, even through games and things that may sound to a parent, oh, they're just playing on X, Y, and Z, but yeah, actually there are some messaging that can be fed through games as well.
Yeah, so we've got sort
of drip fed.
Right.
Very steadily.
Absolutely. So we've got things out like that, like Roblox, Minecraft, those sort of games, which are attractive to children from 7 and above. And we know younger children are using it, but it's meant to be 7 and above. We know that they have been targeted by individuals where they are looking at putting things in place to draw children in. So around radicalisation, they might encourage them to build a scenario in there, which actually recreates a terrorist event. Gosh. And then once they become involved, they will ask them to move over to another chat site so they can further radicalise them. We also know that there have been some issues around things called depression rooms or sad rooms, which are meant to be places, safe places, where children can go to talk about their feelings. Unfortunately, they're not monitored, and certain really sick individuals have created tables in those where they've got knives, and what they will do is encourage a young person to actually self-harm within there.
And this is part of the issue as well, because all of these users, they're going to be anonymous. You know, you can set up, it's your own kind of fabricated reality, right? You don't have to have a picture of yourself with your full name on it. It can be anyone. So you can, maybe they're saying that they're a friend from school or something, and they've been able to find that out by name by looking at your Facebook friends if you're not private. And there's so many things to consider, and it's an absolute, it's a minefield
it
for
is.
Parents.
There's no monitoring of ages.
Yeah.
So they could be,
you just put whatever date of birth you want in. It's just something that can be completely manipulated. So it's, even though they're extreme examples of, you know, depression rooms or radicalization, you don't just see one post and then all of a sudden you're radicalized. It's that drip feeding, and there's a really, in any form of abuse, whether it's domestic abuse or this online abuse that we've been seeing, that drip feeding, there's an example of a frog in boiling water that lots of listeners might have heard of. But essentially, if you've got a vat of boiling water, a pot of boiling water, and you throw a frog into it, please don't do this in real life.
No.
If you throw a frog into it, it's going to jump out immediately because it knows it's boiling. It's really hot. But if you put it in cold water and steadily heat it up bit by bit, the frog is not going to notice.
Right.
And eventually it's going to boil to death. So it's those small little pieces, and that's why within safeguarding it's so important that we're recognizing those little trends, those little patterns. Even though it might seem something that's insignificant, it might build a bigger picture if you keep your eye on it.
Absolutely. Well, it's really, really fascinating hearing you both talk about it this evening, and we'll be continuing the discussion about safeguarding next. Good evening, it is Leah on MKFM with another MK Mental Health Hour. Tonight we're talking all about safeguarding. So we found out what safeguarding is, what a safeguarding case might look like. And a reminder, if you do want to catch up on any of these MK Mental Health podcasts, you can do so on our website, which is mkfm.com. Now though, let's talk about confidentiality and the various kind of boundaries surrounding safeguarding and confidentiality, John.
Yeah, obviously one-to-one mental health support or any conversation with a professional, there's an element of confidentiality that really needs to be respected from both the young person or the person receiving the support, and more so the professional. But it does get to a point, if there is somebody who is at risk, and this should be explained to everybody who's getting that level of support, if there's an element of risk to the individual or anyone else, confidentiality may be broken. Now, this should be done in collaboration with the person, but it can sometimes disrupt that relationship. You know, if we're working with somebody one-to-one in a very therapeutic way and it's a safe space, the moment that we sort of say, right, I need to bring your parents involved in this, generally speaking, the first thing the young person might say is, don't tell my parents.
Yeah.
And it can be quite a difficult conversation, but as long as it's prepped from the start and you've explained that, the rules around that from the start, it should be all right. But it's about making sure that it's collaborative and working closely with the young person to know that they know exactly what you're going to be talking the parents through, they're involved in those decisions, they know what you're going to be saying, so there's no surprises. And then also working with the parents, because I don't know, Tammy, it's a big thing for a parent to hear, you know.
Absolutely. I mean, for the young person to start with, they may be really scared that their parent is going to be angry. Mm. And probably they are going to be to start with. But once they've calmed down and thought about what's going on, their parent is usually behind them. They want to support them. They want to get the support they need in place. So they will very much work with the young person. So the thought of their parent knowing is much worse than the actual reality of it being there. And in reality, what they do need is that support around them. It's not just about them going to services, it's about having that parental base behind them. And when we look at protective factors for children, their friendship groups and their home life is really key in making sure a child is safe. So if they haven't got that element there, then actually it does create risks for the child as well. It increases the risks that may be there.
And like you say, it's all about having that collaborative partnership and making sure that you get the best out of that situation for everybody involved. It's not meant to be this, you know, horrible, scary thing and there are going to be terrible consequences. It's about working together to make the best out of a situation and make things a little bit better.
Yeah, and from our perspective, it's having the time to go through that with parents, because we see it more and more, especially since the pandemic. Like, there's a lot of organisations who have got such an increase in safeguarding issues, all of those maybe low level things that are then just going to escalate into higher level things, right, if they're not dealt with. But because there's such an increase, there's not been a huge amount of increase in funding for additional people to help. We are seeing that Not that they're not being dealt with, but maybe they're not being, you know, the parents aren't being sat down and explained why this is happening with their young person, so they really understand it. So it's really important from a professional's perspective to really take that time. And if, for example, if a young person has disclosed to us that they might be self-harming, really going through with the parent why that happens. Why are they using that? Like, it's not an attention-seeking thing. It's this outlet of really intense emotions and the sort of stuff that we're going to be working through with them and what they can do at home to help. Because in a situation like that, some of the parents, or you know, rightfully a parent, might want to just get rid of all of the sharp things in the house. Mm. But actually, if that's the only coping mechanism for the young person, they're just going to find another way to do it. So it might actually be having a bit more of a detrimental effect. But there are those instances where we've got to break confidentiality.
And often when you talk to parents, their first reaction is, if you involve children's services, they're going to come in, they're going to whip my children away, they're going to take them away. Well, that isn't the case. We don't have the foster carers to actually look after lots of children. The interest is keeping children in their home with the support they need around them, so they're not removed, because actually children thrive better within their home. And even children who have been quite badly abused, they usually tend to still love their parents, even though they may be living in appalling situations. So they still need that interaction and that contact with their wider family within there. So it's not about removing children, it's about getting the support they need.
And I suppose actually doing a bit of a deeper investigation into some of the claims that maybe a child has made.
Yeah, sometimes you may have a child who makes a false allegation, but often there's something else behind that. If they're making a false allegation, there's something else going on that needs to be picked up on. So they may ask for help around one thing, but it's something else they need support around.
It might be even inflated, you know, like, you know, my parent hit me or whatever it might be, and that could just be that they brushed past them in the kitchen. It's that you have to really get to the bottom of what is the perception there of what's actually happened and why is the perception maybe imbalanced.
You've also got some cultural perceptions within there as well, because certain cultures will see physically chastising a child as the way you punish your child if they don't behave. Right. Nobody coming into this country is given information about what is acceptable in terms of our law. Now, physical chastisement is legal in England. It's not legal in Scotland and Wales. So we've even got differences within the UK there. So it's about understanding what is acceptable and what isn't, and giving alternatives. If you're not using that method, what can you use to actually make sure your child is behaving in the way they need to be behaving without actually harming them and causing more issues for them?
Okay, well, it is, like I keep saying, a really important topic and discussion that we're having. We'll give you some more information on how you can safeguard others and report things anonymously right after this. So on this evening's MK Mental Health Hour, we're talking all about safeguarding with John Manning from Arthur Ellis Mental Health Support in Milton Keynes and Tammy Redman, who is an independent trainer and consultant in safeguarding. So Tammy, how do we make sure that we are set up to safeguard others?
I think a lot of it is about being vigilant. It's about looking out and noticing what's going on around you. Lots of families, as we said before, will be really scared about children's services becoming involved, but their role is not there to punish. It's not there to take away children. It's to provide the support that's needed. There was a big review that happened around a case back in 2000, the Victoria Climbier case. And one of the things that came out of the report around that was safeguarding is everybody's business.
Right.
If everybody has a responsibility to safeguard children, then we all need to know what to do and how to report things through. If you're a professional, you have to give your name to any report you give. But actually, as a member of the public, you don't need to give your name. You can do that anonymously, and you can do that via the NSPCC, or you can do it by phoning up the MASH team, which is our multi-agency safeguarding hub. So there are methods of being able to do that. And it's around getting the support in place around that. So, for example, if you were out in Asda shopping, or Waitrose, or wherever you happen to go, and you happen to see a parent who actually loses their temper with the child and hits them really hard, and I've seen that before where they've hit them so hard they've gone from one side of the aisle to the other, it's really important you report that through. If that's happening outside, what's happening behind closed doors? Because it's likely to be much worse within there. And what you can do at that point is you can just phone the police. They can get out there very quickly and they can actually look at what's going on and maybe offer the support that is needed for that family. Again, it's not about punishment. It's about making sure that family has the support and other methods of being able to deal with behaviour issues around that.
And we said earlier on this, these things are majority of 87% or something.
Yeah, 87.
It are small little things like that, like, you know, hygiene slipping or losing weight or whatever it might be, being hungry. So it's not necessarily always a massive thing like that, but it's just important to raise it, even if not to say that instance was right, maybe someone hitting a child across an aisle, but that demonstrates that the parent is really struggling to manage that child's behaviour, or, you know, something's maybe going on for the parent themselves, so they need some level of support there so it doesn't escalate and doesn't continue.
I mean, I wouldn't want anybody to be in the situation where they have seen something, didn't do anything about it, and then we end up with the child dying.
Mm.
So some of the major case reviews that we've had nationally, we had the Arthur Labinjo Hughes case. The neighbours around heard what was going on in that household, yet not one of them picked up the phone and alerted somebody. You don't need to give your name. It's just about making sure somebody is aware. If one person had acted within that, it might have prevented that child from dying. So really important, if you do see something, don't leave it. You don't want to live with the guilt of actually knowing you could have done something, but you didn't do anything about it at all.
It's that age-old thing, isn't it, of thinking, oh, someone else will deal with that. Someone else will act on that. But like you say, it's so important to remember that it's on all of us to recognise those things.
Yeah, and again, we're British. We've got that view around it's none of our business. You don't get involved. You don't step in. We have to with children. There's no choice about it.
And there's actually a really good story I wouldn't mind reading out, which is only a short story.
Do,
it's not like we're not going to sit down and go through Lord of the Rings. But this is a story about four people named Everybody, Somebody, Anybody and Nobody. There is an important job to be done and everybody was sure that somebody would do it. Anybody could have done it, but nobody did. Somebody got angry about that because it was everybody's job. Everybody thought anybody could do it, but nobody realised that everybody wouldn't do it. It ended up that everybody blamed somebody when nobody did it, what anybody could have done. So it's kind of like everyone's shifting the buck, or someone else will do it, or I've seen this and someone else will raise that because I've seen it, so somebody else would have been. And then it turns out everyone's thinking in that way and nobody actually does anything about it. So certainly from a professional's point of view, even if it's a small thing, I would rather raise the alarm, have egg on my face, but feel secure in the fact that I did something about it, rather than kind of ignore it and think someone else is going to pick up on it.
Absolutely. And you actually mentioned some key resources, Tammy. If people do spot something, who should they call, and do you have those details to hand?
Yeah, we've got the NSPCC helpline number, which is one that you can do anonymously, which is 0808 800 5000. And then we have the MASH team, which is our multi-agency safeguarding hub in Milton Keynes, which goes directly through to Children's Services. That's 01908 253 169 or 253 170. Both those numbers are available and can be phoned at any point.
Brilliant. And like we've said then, you know, this is your sign that if you do spot something, then do please act. Because like Tammy said earlier, you know, there might be more that's kind of going on behind the scenes. And there is support out there to help people to manage those situations. It's been so insightful talking to you both this evening and finding out more information. We've gone through so many amazing tips and ideas and talks about safeguarding. So in the final link of MK Mental Health Hour tonight, we're going to do a bit of a summary, hopefully, with John, just to kind of identify some of those key points that we've run through, and we'll do that next. So on the MK Mental Health Hour this evening, we've been talking all about safeguarding. Some really interesting points of discussion tonight. John from Arthur Ellis Mental Health Support, can you run us through just some of the key elements that we've been talking about? Thank you very much.
I can try. It's such a big topic, but it's such an important one and one that we deal with all the time. So safeguarding generally is just for us to step in if we think that someone may be at risk, not necessarily that they are. So it's very exploratory. It's not something big and scary that people are going to swoop in and take over your parenting or take over from you necessarily. It's just a case of making sure that we can start getting support in. And those issues come in a variety of forms. There's those extreme ones that we mentioned, but there's also that drip feeding of small little instances that can build up a pattern. So whether it's someone losing weight, being hungry, looking a bit disheveled, all the way through to how they might be behaving online and seeing. So from a parent's perspective, and also from young people that might be listening, be really careful of anonymous profiles on these platforms. Really try and restrict it to verify profiles that you know are their friends, because otherwise you don't know what's happening behind the scenes on these things. So it's not big and scary. It doesn't mean that everyone's going to swoop in. If anything, it's to support you. Make sure that you're supported throughout anything that might be going on in the family. And it's everyone's responsibility. It's not just down to the professionals to raise these things. So if you see that there might be these issues coming out with a neighbour, someone in a shopping aisle that we talked about earlier on,
or a relative,
you know, you can raise these things anonymously. It's really easy to do. You can just Google Milton Keynes safeguarding. There's an adult hub, there's a children's hub, there's numbers and there's emails. You can speak to a professional before you act, so just run it by them and double check, is this something that should be raised anonymously? And do it. You know, it's everyone's responsibility, and we don't want everybody to think that it's someone else is going to do it.
Brilliant. Well done, John. Very well said. And if people want to find out more information and they want to maybe come and speak to Arthur Ellis, how can they do that?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's arthurellismhs.com. We've got a shiny new website, so please go and check it out. Give us your feedback. But certainly from Tammy's perspective, I'd certainly vouch for her training. I think so many professionals do across the city. She's pretty booked up because of the quality of it. But if anyone does want to get in touch with Tammy, feel free to do it through us. I know that your website needs a lot of work doing to it, doesn't it?
So just don't have the time to do it.
We can certainly help to facilitate more people getting trained in this area. And in the future, Arthur Ellis is looking to do some online courses around safeguarding. So please keep an eye out for that so that we can get more people aware of these things.
And just a quick message for parents, really. Don't be ashamed of asking for help. Everybody struggles at certain points. There's no shame in that whatsoever. And actually, it's far more better being a better parent to ask for that help when you need it than to ignore it. Things only get worse if they get left. So make sure you're proactive in terms of getting help when you need it.
Absolutely. Well, amazing. Thank you both so much for tonight. It's been so fascinating. I can see why you are so booked up, Tammy, because it's been so fascinating hearing you talk about safeguarding. And I've really learned quite a lot this evening. So that is Tammy Redman, who is an independent trainer and consultant in safeguarding, and John Manning from Arthur Ellis Mental Health Support. Thank you both so much. And John, I will see you next month for another MK Mental Health Hour. And a reminder, if you do want to catch up on any of the MK Mental Health Hours that we have featured over the last couple of months, you can listen to the full podcast over on our website at mkfm.com.